Serve It Cold, Episode 4. Written by Ronnie Blackwell, presented by Dancing Cat Studios.
Lo? Yeah, this is Helen. No eyes outside looking at my daylilies when I heard the phone. I'm just a little out of breath. I am careful on the front steps, Darlene. What you talking to me like I'm an old woman? You know you're older than me by... What? What kind of gun Homer got? Oh, just a BB gun. Uh-huh. Well, he hit speed or not? Oh. Well, I guess that's good. Seeley would have been madder than heck if Johnny'd got hurt. So, Johnny's took off. Is Gojo there? Uh-huh. Yeah, he's a good boy. Who else? Well, of course Bebop's there. Where else would he be selling his dope? Of course, Seeley says that while Bebop and the Amen Pinch are there, there's not much chance of Joe getting robbed by anybody else. Well, you'll never convince Seeley that Johnny Speed is anything other than a saint. She thinks Joe's lucky to have somebody like Speed looking out after him. Now that John Turner, now that's another matter, Darlene. He had a rough side, but he was a good man. Too bad he got himself killed down there in Louisiana. Speed probably had something to do with that, too. I know he was with him. So now you taking up for him, too? Well, I'm telling you now, Johnny C. Speed is up to something. I wonder what got Homer Blue mad at him enough to be a-wasting his BBs.
The cradle was alive with construction workers when I got there. I could hear Goat's voice booming from deep within the building, and carefully picked my way around the holes and piles of brick toward him. Goat was glad to see me, but his mood was a dark one. He grabbed a couple of Hefeweizens and headed up to the second floor. We flew through a couple of swinging doors and one reinforced door into a room about 20 feet by 30. It was the only part of the building that actually looked finished and was obviously going to be Goat's office. You could call it Super Bowl chic. Pictures, posters, game balls, jerseys, and helmets. There was even a large white board with what looked like football play schematics drawn on it in several colors. When we entered, Goat's mood visibly lightened.
This is the Castle Keep. We call it the Vault. This room was built back in the bad old days when they were running blackjack and slot machines downstairs. This was their counting room and the high-stakes poker room. We knocked down the wall that separated them.
He gestured toward the far end of the room.
We liked to never got the hole punched through the outside wall for that fire escape door. Reinforced concrete with actual railroad rails, tied in vertically, horizontally, every 32 inches. The reinforcing carries all the way down into the foundation. When we were there trying to get that done, we found this dumb waiter shaft they must have used to get the money up here without sending someone through the door. We're using the shaft to get some air up here until we get the air conditioning run in from above, but I'd like to make it a dumb waiter again. Right below us will be the club manager's office. Johnny C., next tornado you see coming, this is the place to run to.
At the sound of Goat's voice, the quilt that lay draped across a couch down near the door started to move. And a head full of thick, tousled hair emerged, followed by a pale face, covered with bruises and scabbed-over cuts.
This fine specimen is Sonny Richard. Come on, Sonny, crawl on out. I want you to meet somebody.
Goat, remind me to never have a serious talk with you. Goat gave a mirthless chuckle.
No, I didn't do this to him. Somebody beat me to it. My plan is to nurse the bastard back to health and then prove to him that I'm a meaner son of a bitch than the creep that beat him up.
Sonny Richard stood up. The muscle shirt and boxers he had on showed that the beating wasn't confined to the head. He managed a crab-like shuffle for a few steps before collapsing into a chair at the table that dominated the end of the room. We joined him.
Sonny, this here is Johnny C. You are going to tell him what happened, you hear?
Sonny nodded, but before he could say anything, Goat was talking again.
You see, Sonny wasn't quite as forthright with me yesterday as I would have liked him to be.
He shook his head in disgust.
Johnny C., Narlene's AWOL, and Sonny might just know why. If you think that sending your sister out with a dude who doesn't drink, is gay, and a black belt in wushu to boot is a pretty safe thing to do in Catherine, Mississippi. Come to find out I was wrong, wasn't I, Sonny? Go ahead, tell him. Saturday night.
Once more, Richard tried to speak, and Goat preempted him again.
Don't mind Sonny mumbling today, Johnny C. He's got to get a little dental work done tomorrow.
When he finally started talking, Sonny had an amazingly strong voice for someone who looked like he had an extra couple of curves in his jaw.
Saturday night, I went out to check the competition, and Narlene tagged along. We went to three or four places. We got to the Silver Dollar over on Front Street about midnight. Like Goat said, I don't drink.
Alcoholic?
Yes. 6 years sober. So we're down at the Silver Dollar, and I run into this guy I know from the Point, Jerry Joachim. We both did martial arts stuff when we were kids. Jerry's got this dude with him. Says he's his cousin Ray. He's not. I don't think so. I remember this guy from the Quarter. Don't remember his name, but it might have been Ray for all I know. But he's nothing but trouble. Word was he was a mercenary and a freelance contract killer for the mob. You can't believe all that crap. There are 15 or 20 guys in the Quarter that like to show that kind of heavy leather persona. But I think this guy's the real deal. Well, Jerry and I run out of conversation in about 30 seconds. He and the Ray dude go off on their own. Narlene sees some friends and goes over to their table. I sit back and listen to the band, the Drapes. They got good chops. We can sure use them here.
I nodded agreement.
So I sit there in the corner, and I see Narlene dancing every once in a while. One time I look up and she's dancing with Jerry. But you know, everything seems copacetic. About 1:30 I get ready to leave, but I can't find Narlene. I walk outside and she's coming around the side of the building with her friends. She's stoned. Real stoned. Bloody eyes, giggly, feet shuffling, stoned. No problem. I mean, I ain't her father, right? She wants to be dropped off here to get her car. But I know she doesn't need to be driving, so I drive her home. Watch her get to the door and get in safely like any good southern boy would. That's the last time I saw her that night. One more thing. When we left the bar, we had to walk a block to the car. I drove back by the bar, and Jerry and Ray Dude were coming from around the same side of the building as Narlene and her friends were coming from. But I don't think anything about it then.
He stopped talking. He and Goat both turned to me. I realized that they were expecting me to ask questions. I thought he had painted a pretty good picture. Obviously, he wanted me to infer that the pot came from Jerry and the Ray dude. I asked what I thought was a gratuitous question. So, when did you see Narlene yesterday? Sonny shook his head and looked at Goat. There was a pause, and then Goat gave a long sigh.
We both talked to her on the phone, but neither of us actually saw her.
Goat, when you came to the store yesterday, you were dressed in church clothes. You didn't see her at church?
No, she missed church. My mom was heartbroken because Narlene had this perfect attendance record thing.
So Jerry and Ray could have been waiting for her when she came into my store. They could have followed me to the trace. I turned to Goat. What did you do about the package, Goat?
Sonny, tell him.
Well, Goat told me about the pot and showed me the sample you gave him. I convinced him that we should get it and sell it.
Sonny, don't sugarcoat it. Joint decision. This construction thing has us a little thin in cash. Stupid joint decision.
Well, I drove by and checked out the place. About dark, I walked from my place up to the Big Star and bought some milk and a couple of little things. I asked for a large paper bag. I walked home down Gulfport, looked in the culvert, put the pot in my grocery bag, and headed home. I got about halfway down the block when they hit me from behind. I can't help thinking about the old joke about the city slicker who jumps into a defense stance and yells, "Ha! Karate!" And the redneck reaches into the trunk of his car and yells, "Ha! Tire tool!" That was me, except I didn't get a chance to yell anything, and they hit me with rebar instead of a tire tool.
He pushed aside his mop of hair to reveal that the right side of his head had been shaved, and a row of stitches traced an ugly, twisted cut.
I don't think I even got a blow in, but I really can't remember much besides walking down the street with the bag and waking up in the emergency room at the hospital covered in blood and milk.
How did you get to the emergency room?
Cops. Patrol car found me in the middle of the street.
What did you tell them?
The truth. I went to the store to buy a quart of milk.
They seemed to think it was a gang initiation.
Might have been, but that's usually a summer or Christmas phenomenon around here. Sonny shook his head.
No, I can't believe it was a bunch of kids that snuck up on me. Look, I'm no Jackie Chan, but I am good, and I was on alert. I didn't hear anything before they were on me.
You keep saying they. Why do you think there was more than one attacker?
I don't know. Maybe I just assumed it was Jerry and Ray. Damn! That's it!
You remember two people?
No, but I remember someone saying, I don't know, it might have been me. I remember somebody saying over and over, don't kill him. Don't kill him.
He got a little glassy-eyed and leaned over to put his head on his arms, but jerked back as one or more of his hurts flared up at the new posture. Goat reached over and pulled Sonny's chair, with Sonny in it, closer to his. He did this with the same ease I could reach out and move the beer bottle in front of me. He pulled out a penlight and started checking Richard's eyes for asymmetrical pupil response, a common facet of head injury care. I was more familiar with the process than I wanted to be, and I expect that Goat had plenty of practice in the NFL. Then he started checking all of Sonny's wounds for bleeding or ripped stitches. The giant nurse talked as he worked.
So, Johnny C, Nolene didn't show up for Sunday school, for church, or for night church. She left a message on Mama's phone this morning saying that she was going to New Orleans with a friend for a couple of days.
Is that unusual, to go out of town without discussing it with you or your mother?
No, not really. She wasn't in school this summer, has a very light load this fall. She's 19 and testing her boundaries. She and her friends took off several times this summer to Florida, Gulf Shores, places like that. Fun and sun with her old basketball buddies. UMAC hasn't made it public yet, but Narlene's quit basketball.
Whoa. How do you feel about that?
Me? I'm up for it. There's way too much regimentation in college sports. Mama's seen how much it bothered me, so she's for it too. She gave them 2 years. Now she can take her time and find a real major. We've got one sports admin major too many in this family already. Narlene's smart enough to make a life with her brain, not her jump shot. At least that's what I thought till now. So anyway, taking off on a whim is not unusual, but not going to church is. She made it back for Sunday school every trip this summer. My mother is fit to be tied. Not only did Narlene miss Sunday school, she picked Sunday morning to announce to all of Crosstown that she's doing drugs. And on that phone message, she didn't say which friend she was leaving with. And most important, as far as Mom is concerned, she didn't say that she was sorry for any of this. One more thing, Narlene is not answering her cell.
Suddenly, Richard stood up and almost shouted.
Ragonet. That bastard's name is Ragonet. And he is a Ray. Rayford Raphael Ragonet. Three R's. They were talking about it at the bar, calling themselves JJ and three R's.
What the hell kind of name is Ragonet?
Filipino, I think. Maybe even Canary Islander. But this guy's all Cajun. And I had a boyfriend who was from Gene, Louisiana, which is way down the bayou toward Golden Meadow. He's the one who warned me to stay away from Ragonet. Now, this guy's from Gene, and I ask him where Ragonet is from. He says, way downriver. You got to stand on the hood of your car when it rains in Gene. And he says, way downriver.
Richard was now standing straight and gesturing with one hand while he talked.
I think the painkillers have kicked in again.
I had to agree. Goat. What you need to know from me is that the cops are interested in this mess, and somebody's feeding them information. My best bet is somebody in Bebop's crew, but it just could be Narlene. She's the one who called them first, after all. So the good news is that we don't have the pot. The bad news is that we also don't know where Narlene is, and that somebody almost killed Sonny here to take it away from him. And there are two hard edges hanging around that are probably involved with the pot, and probably involved in Narlene's impromptu vacation. Going to the Catherine cops is probably not a good idea. We can't even truly say that Narlene is missing. We sure as hell don't want the New Orleans PD involved unless we have to. My first inclination is for you to do nothing. Wait for Narlene to call, find out where she is, and go get her.
Now listen, I can't wait around here and do nothing while...
Now, hold on, Goat. First, hear me out. It just so happens that I'm headed to New Orleans in the morning on another case. You call around to Narlene's friends and try to find out where she is. I still expect Narlene will call you tomorrow. Whatever. You get a lead on her here, call me on my cell and I'll track her down. Okay? He thought for a long time, both hands held up in front of his face as if fending off punches. He finally sighed and lowered his fists.
Okay. What's your fee, Johnny C?
Give me $1. I've got a receipt book here in my pocket. I'll work for you for the sum of $1 and other considerations. As long as you've got a Henry to share with me, that's all the consideration I need. He started to protest, but stopped and held his hand out to me.
Thanks, Johnny C.
Goat, can you get maybe 3 different pictures of Narlene and drop them by the mini-mart? I'll get them from Gojo later, print some copies tonight. He nodded assent. I turned to talk to Sonny, but he had slumped down in his chair and was sound asleep. I nodded toward the body and said, "And they say that marijuana is a nonviolent crime."
Yeah, I don't think Sonny here would say so. He'll be this way for a day or two. Soon as the drugs really kick in and take pain away, he'll sleep, sitting, standing, leaning, it don't matter. But he's going to be all right.
You sound like you know that road yourself.
Oh God, yeah. The NFL is nothing but the very same road full of potholes. Now, please go find my baby sister.
I fully intended to, but first I had to take care of the case that was actually paying me. I knew that Latimer Grantham was not going to be the oral surgeon who would be piecing Sonny Richard's jaw back together the next day. Vera had called during lunch, looking for someone who could cut out a painful molar. Dr. Grantham was not available, since he was leaving this afternoon after his last appointment at 4 o'clock. And he would be out of town at a conference through Thursday. But she could make an appointment for early Friday afternoon. Vera promised that she would certainly be dead by then, and hung up. I would never have been able to extract that much information, but for some reason, people just liked to talk to Vera. Now I not only had an idea of how long I would be in New Orleans, but when I should go hound dog Latimer. At 4:35, I was sitting in the parking lot of the Hardy County Maxillofacial Surgery Center when a man who could very well have been Landis's twin popped out of the back door of the clinic and got into the car that I had already picked out as his, a new yellow Porsche 911 convertible. It was clear that I was surveilling a much higher class of car these days. By the time I cranked old Blue and got out of the parking lot, Porsche was gone, but he had been heading in the right direction to be going home. I, too, headed out of town into Catherine's wild, wild west. Here, urban sprawl was alive and well, shopping centers and strip malls crawling over the land in a constant flux of tear down, build, rent, remodel, and tear down. The multiplying stoplights and ever-present road construction helped even the playing field between the two cars, and I was able to see the flash of yellow ahead when Latimer turned off the highway into the Lake Shady development. Latimer lived in one of the oldest and nicest houses in Lake Shady. The house sat on its own peninsula, a graceful two-story Queen Anne replica with decks, balconies, and porches jutting out from all sides. Latimer lived in the huge house alone, since his wife Marie had been killed by a hit-and-run driver trying to cross Highway 90 to get to the beach in Biloxi. The car had been stolen in Ocean Springs and was later recovered in East New Orleans. The driver had never been found. I drove by the house slowly and saw that Lily's red Jag was already parked beside the Porsche. I drove by and turned into the washed-out driveway on the lot adjacent. I drove just enough into the thick scrub to hide the van from the road. I knew the family who used to own this lot. At one time they had a small vacation cabin on the lake here, but it had been 15 years since I'd been here. I walked down to the end of the driveway to find nothing left at the cabin site. If Latimer were as smart as he seemed to be rich, he would have bought this lot and the one on the other side to buffer his house from development. I pushed through the heavy brush to the edge of Grantham's yard and settled down with my bag of toys into an overgrown azalea, not unlike the one in which I started the day. I quickly decided that shooting through the double-paned windows would be hopeless until after dark. However, the late afternoon sun would provide perfect light on the broad deck at the rear of the house. The distance was further than I would have liked, but there was nothing between me and the house other than 40 yards of manicured Bermuda grass. Once again, I rigged my digital camera to shoot through my 60mm Nikon field scope, clipped a tiny boom mic to the lens hood of the scope so that I could scan for sound while panning the scope, and attached the mic to my new bionic ear headphones and tape recorder. I was either on the cutting edge of clandestine surveillance or about to be crushed by the sheer weight of my geekiness. I was shooting a couple of test shots of the hot tub on the deck when the door opened and Lily came out of the house holding a tall pitcher of what looked like sangria. Latimer soon followed with a tray of food and two glasses. I quickly discovered that the audio equipment was useless. The hot tub drowned out all conversation, and there didn't seem to be much of that. They were both wearing thigh-length white bathrobes. At least they were, before they let them fall to the floor. Then they were wearing nothing. Although, to tell you the truth, I wasn't paying that much attention to Latimer, but I did notice that his hair was still jet black, as opposed to Landis's salt and pepper. And he was clean-shaven. Lily. Well, Lily was everything I had imagined, and more. And she wasn't smoking now. While they drank and fed each other over the next hour, the setting sun gave me great shots of the two tanned bodies. Occasionally a boat would round the point and honk its horn. Both hot tubbers would rise to their feet and wave, which would usually lead to a thank you honk at the sight of Lily's large and shapely breasts. It seemed that this little show was a regular event out here in the suburbs, and I must admit that I've done worse duty. The haze of dusk was thickening when the two climbed out of the tub, dried each other off, and sank to the mat just behind the hot tub. They were now hidden from the view of the passing boats, but nicely framed by the posts of the deck's railing for my pictures. The light was failing, but I knew that the coated lens of my field scope would gather every bit of it. During the next 15 minutes, I gathered more than enough evidence for any divorce proceeding. Back at the van, I took the flashcard from the camera and slipped it into my PowerBook to see the results. The pictures were clear and beautiful. My job was done. I should sit tight and wait for Landis to call, but he did say that the hotel room was paid for, and I needed to go to New Orleans to track down Narlene. A day in the quarter is always better than a day behind the cash register, and I could get in a little birding on the way. I clicked through picture after picture of Lily's tan body in the evening sun, and knew that I was going. Later, I would wonder what would have happened if I had stayed put. But what-ifs don't pay the mortgage. On the way home, I called Vera. "Babe, when you get off, would you stop by 27th Avenue and get us a bottle of good Spanish white? Maybe a Rioja? I'm about to stop at the fruit stand. How does sangria and fish tacos sound for tonight?"
You have been listening to Serve It Cold by Ronnie Blackwell, starring Eric Rowe and Beth Wojcicki. Diverse parts by Roger Johnson, Mike Wynn, Martha Holloway, Paul Fisher, and Julia Holloway. Theme song, Where Is the Love by Michelle Malone. You can find out more about her and her music at www.michellemalone.com. Artwork, courtesy of Georgia Godwin and Laura Mann. Serve It Cold is a free audiobook available at dancingcatstudios.com. This and many other fine works are also available at patiobooks.com. For a print or ebook version of the book, visit ronnieblackwell.com or search for it by name at lulu.com. Dancing Cat Studios produces full cast dramatizations of novel length fiction. We'd love to hear from you. You can shoot us questions and comments by email at dancingcatstudios@gmail.com or start some wild speculation about your favorite episodes at our website, dancingcatstudios.com, or just pick up the phone and give us a call at 206-350-7613. Serve It Cold is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 U.S. license. A copy of this license is available at creativecommons.org. Ronnie would be delighted for you to share episodes of this work as often as you like, with as many people as you like, provided, of course, that you give credit where credit is due, you do not charge any fee, you do not use any part of an episode to create something new, and you only copy episodes in their entirety. Some sound effects are courtesy of the Free Sound Project. Direct links and complete credits can be found at DancingCatStudios.com.